So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. I wonder if you can remember the last time you were very angry. Well, maybe you're unlike me. Maybe you're a terribly calm person. You never get angry. But perhaps you can think of a time when almost unexpectedly something frustrating occurred to you and suddenly some anger flared up from within. Was it that incompetent salesperson who kept you waiting, almost it seemed deliberately, when you were in a hurry that day, whilst they were idly chatting to someone on the phone? Or was it that driver who cut you off on the motorway? Or those roadworks which held you up for hours in a massive tailback? Or was it the constant interruption from that person at home or in the office when all you wanted to do was find some peace? Now, as I said, I used to think before I was a calm person. But having four children who are generally speaking little darlings, but occasionally prove otherwise, I've quickly discovered I'm no saint in this area of anger. The pressure of anger. We're going to look at this passage today from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 to 27, to try and get some help. What does the Bible teach us about anger and how we are to deal with it when we get angry? So would you turn to that reading, Ephesians 4, those short readings, 26 to 27. Now note as we begin two things about what the Apostle Paul commands here. First of all, Paul does not assume that all anger is wrong. He does not assume that all anger is wrong. So he says there, in your anger do not sin. Or as the old RSV translated it, be angry, but don't sin. That is, it's possible to be angry and not to sin. That is, to be righteously angry. Now, Paul makes this clear later in Ephesians. For a few verses later, he says, "Don't be deceived with." He says, "Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling, and slander." And there, in that command, he's associating anger with a form of anger with bitterness, rage, and brawling. So he's there talking about the Ephesians getting rid of that sort of anger. Anger that destroys human relationships, that pulls people down. Get rid of that sort of anger, he says. But then, later on, in Ephesians 5, he speaks of God. He says, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of such things, God's wrath, or in brackets, or anger, comes on those who are disobedient. So there's God displaying a righteous anger, an anger that is deserved, that seeks to put away things that are wrong. It's the sort of anger that we sometimes see Jesus displaying in the Gospels. Remember that story of Jesus healing a man with a shriveled hand on the Sabbath. And when he did that in Mark chapter 3, he turned to the Pharisees and we read, and Jesus looked at the Pharisees in anger, distressed at their stubborn hearts. So in that context, there was a righteous anger. Jesus was rightly angry at the Pharisees for their lack of compassion towards this man who was desperately in need of healing. There is such a thing as righteous anger. John Stott, in one of his books, says this: there is a real need in our contemporary world for more Christian anger. We human beings compromise sin in a way that God never does. In the face of blatant sin, we should be indignant, not tolerant, angry, not apathetic. If God hates sin, his people should hate it as well. If evil arouses his anger, it should arouse us as well. So the first point we note from these verses, not all anger is wrong. But if there is the danger of unrighteous anger, if there is a righteous anger, there is also the danger of unrighteous anger. And this is the second point to note in these verses. It requires effort to avoid sinful anger. So in these verses, we see Paul issuing a challenge to the Ephesian Christians and to us today to be angry but not to sin. In fact, there are three do nots in those verses. Do not sin. Do not let the sun go down whilst you are angry. Do not give the devil a foothold. Three times he says it because he knows it takes effort to avoid ungodly anger. It's not something that we find naturally easy to do. The story is told of Alexander the Great, one of the great leaders of the ancient world, known for his intelligence, his energy, his flexibility. Well, one day, apparently, one of the generals in his army became drunk and began to ridicule the emperor in front of his men. Well, Alexander became furious, and quick as a lightning without thinking, he grabbed a spear from one of the soldiers and hurled it at this general who was his friend. And although he intended only to scare the man, his aim was true and the spear took the life of his childhood friend. And Alexander was deeply grief-stricken. He tried to take his own life with the same spear, but his men stopped him. And for days he lay sick, calling for his friend and chiding himself as a murderer. And as someone has written as a result of that incident, Alexander the Great conquered many cities and countries, but he failed miserably to conquer his own anger. It takes effort to avoid ungodly anger. But note the context in which Paul is writing. Verse 24, look up in Ephesians 4. It's in the context of the Ephesians being given new life in Christ. And as a result of that new life, he says, you are to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. That is, we've got a new calling, he says, that we are to live up to, and that calling is to be like God in this regard. And how is God with respect to anger? Psalm 86, he is slow to anger, abounding in love. That is, we are a new creation as Christians, but we call to live out our new life by putting off old ways, sinful anger, and putting on new ways. Be angry, but don't sin. It takes effort to avoid sinful anger. Someone has said, there's always the subtle temptation to regard my anger as righteous indignation, and to point the finger at others and regard their anger as just bad temper. It's easy to say, be angry but don't sin. But friends, how are we going to do it? What practical ways can we achieve this? And let me just make four suggestions from this passage and my own experience that might help us. Four things that we might try to do. First of all, recognize that anger does have a place. We need to learn to differentiate between different types of anger. Now, for some of us, this will be hard. We might have been brought up in a home where conflict and anger were kept behind closed doors. And so we shy away from those emotions, and we think of them always as wrong or ungodly. And often they are. But not always. So, for example, in bereavement, bereavement often includes within it feelings of anger. It might be the death of someone close to us. It might be a divorce, the loss of a job, even the loss of a once vibrant faith. And whatever the cause of the bereavement, sooner or later, we will feel angry about it. Why did this happen to me? It's just not fair. Now, such feelings of anger within that context are not of themselves sinful. The story of Job is the story of somebody who was in grief and who is wrestling with his feelings and faith, and he gets angry. And he was not angry in an ungodly sense. In his context, and in many of ours hopefully, we can be angry, but it's part of the process of healing. The problem is if we get stuck in such feelings and don't move on. Michael Lawson, in his book Facing Depression, writes this: emotion should not be buried alive. If there is repressed emotion needing to be released, then it's important that it finds a suitable way of expression. The most important first step is to admit to the existence of hidden inner pain, then to face up to it and make an agreement with yourself not to repress it any longer, but rather to address yourself to its expression and to its constructive management and resolution. So we need to recognise that anger does have a place as an ordinary human emotion. Of itself, anger is neutral. It's neither good nor bad. The question is, how do we respond to it when it comes? How do we harness it so that good will ultimately come? Or in the words of the poet William Blake, "I was angry with my friend, I told my wrath did end. I was angry with my foe, I told it not, my wrath did grow." So firstly, recognise that anger does have a place. Secondly, set limits to your anger. Paul says, "In your anger do not sin. Don't let the sun go down while you are still angry." Paul here is wanting us to develop that fruit of the Spirit called self-control. We're not to allow anger to get out of control, but to continually rein it in. The story of Cain and Abel that was read for us is a classic case of somebody who did not do this. One sin led to the other. The question of offerings led him to jealousy. Jealousy led to anger. Anger then led to a desire to get revenge, and that led to murder. The snowballing of sin. Paul's saying, he commands us, set a limit to your anger so that you won't end up sinning. It's a very practical command. He gives us a limit to our anger of a single day. A single day for your anger. Do not let the sun set on your anger. Now for the Jews, the start of a new day was sunset. So Paul is basically saying, don't ever go to bed angry. Get it all sorted out beforehand. Now, I can't tell you how helpful that command has been to me and my wife in our marriage and in our parenting. It has meant at times late nights as we try to sort out an issue. It has meant at times me swallowing my pride and seeking my children's forgiveness. But it places a limit on the anger. It helps us realise the triviality of so many of our arguments and disputes. And it says, they may be important, but don't let them go on and on and on. There are ultimately bigger things that are more important for you to focus on. His limit helps us get things into perspective. I like the story of Abraham Lincoln, whose Secretary of War, Edwin Stanton, was apparently angered by an army officer who accused him of favoritism. Stanton complained to Lincoln, who suggested that he write the officer a sharp letter. Stanton did, and he showed the strongly worded letter to the president. "Well, what are you going to do about it?" Lincoln asked. And surprised, Stanton replied, "Send it." And Lincoln shook his head. "You don't want to send that letter," he said. "Put it in the fire. That's what I do when I've written a letter while I'm angry. It's a good letter, and you've had a good time writing it and feel better, but burn it and write another." We're called to be people who set limits to our anger. Don't keep it past a single day. You may need to write a letter and then burn it. You may need to have a late night conversation on the phone or on the couch. But set a limit to your anger. Don't allow it to grow. And that leads to our third point. Be aware of the cancer of bitterness. Be aware of the cancer of bitterness. Paul says in verse 27, "Do not give the devil a foothold." Paul is only too aware of the way that unresolved anger can easily grow and lead to bitterness. And such bitterness, he says, is basically food for the devil. 1 Peter says, "Your enemy the devil prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." We do the devil's work for him if we nurse our anger. And he loves to exploit those situations for his own advantage. Someone has said that the devil's invitation to us goes something like this: "Come unto me, all you who are grieved, peeved, misused, and disgruntled, and I'll spread on the sympathy. At my altar you'll be free to fail and fall, and there to sigh and fret. There I'll feed your soul on fears and indulge your ego with envy, jealousy and bitterness, and you will find no rest at all." Bill Hybels quotes a paramedic in one of the toughest areas of Chicago. And the paramedic says this: "You know how it goes. It starts with a little misunderstanding. It escalates when someone gets his feelings hurt and uses a bit of sarcastic language. His sarcasm provokes a smart aleck response, which elicits a threat and then a challenge. And now the male bravado and honour gets going. And then comes the fists and the clubs and the knives and the guns. The blood flows and the flesh tears. And when it's all over and people are lying in piles, they call us, and we come in to pick up the pieces." And Hybel adds this: "It's been going that way for thousands of years. Granted that in so-called sophisticated cities or suburban environments, most of our hostilities don't end up in hand-to-hand combat. They end in cold wars, detachment, distrust, alienation, bitterness, name-calling, mudslinging, separation, isolation, and lawsuits. Although we rarely fight with our fists, we can do a great deal of damage without ever soiling our three-piece suits." Beware of the cancer of bitterness and unresolved anger. And finally, what can we do about all this? The fourth thing: practice the art of forgiveness. Paul, in this whole letter to the Ephesians, has been reminding the Christians and us just what God has done for us. "When we were dead in our transgressions, God made us alive through Christ. Christ has broken the dividing walls of hostility that divided us from one another." Well, how are we to respond in the light of what God has done for us? Well, at the end of chapter 4, Paul says this: "Therefore, be kind and compassionate to one another and forgive each other, just as in Christ God has forgiven you." We're called to practice the art of forgiveness. We will only stop the endless cycle of anger and bitterness and rage and jealousy, all that we've been talking about, if we are willing to forgive. It's a big ask to ask somebody to forgive. My guess is many of us here today know what it's like to carry deep wounds and angry feelings, for we've carried them for years. And they're painful, and they hurt us deep inside. But if we're ever going to move on in our lives, if we are to avoid what Paul says here, giving the devil a foothold, there is one thing that we're called to do. We're called to practice the costly art of forgiveness. As someone has said, we need to let our prisoners, that is, those hurts and that anger that we've bound up tight inside, we need to let our prisoners go free. And as we drop the charges against them, we'll find that we are one step closer to true freedom of life. So, friends, the challenge for us all today is this: in your anger, do not sin. Recognize that anger does have a place. It's not all bad. But set limits to your anger. Learn self-control. Be aware of the cancer of bitterness. Don't allow the devil a foothold. And lastly, learn the costly art of forgiveness, for it's the only path to true freedom.